This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/iFanboy. This is iFanboy Pick of the Week number 802, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you who are washing hands, wearing masks, getting vaccinated, drinking water, getting exercise, calling your mom, tipping the postman.
Jeez, I got a lot to do.
I know. It's the world we live in. Hello, welcome to iFanboy Pick of the Week, episode 802. I am Josh Flanagan. This is my co-host, Connor Kilpatrick. Hello.
Hey, Josh. Hello.
You know what you did. We are iFanboy, and every week we read our stack of comics. I never know. I always assume I did something and I don't know what it is and everyone hates me. Every week we read our stack of comics. One of us picks the one that they like the best. We call that the pick of the week. We read that book. We talk about other books. We talk about the patron pick. We answer some listener mail. We have fun. We think that we have less comics than we did for the second week in a row. And they kind of add up on you, but it's fine. It's fine because it's just fun. We're here to have fun, okay?
Yeah.
There's gonna be spoilers, okay? And I don't want to hear anything about it.
But fun spoilers.
You get the pick.
Yeah. I ended up having 26 books this week on top of the landmine that was when I was not on the show a couple weeks ago. So I had to go back and read a couple of books from last time too. So I still haven't cleared those out yet. So you know how that goes. So
they're mine are there too.
Dang.
Mine are still there from the time that I took off in June.
How's that possible?
No, not June. I took off a day in August, I guess, and then they doubled up. And I think I've got the double rid of, but it was a big week, and there's many there.
So I had a lot of reading to do. I ended up with a handful of books I really liked, a handful of books that could have been the pick, and there were books I was thinking about throughout the course of the day of reading that could have been the pick, and we're going to talk about them. But at the end of the day, the book that ended up being the pick of the week was from Comixology Originals. I think it's their first pick of the week. Clear number one from Scott Snyder, Francis Manapul, and World Design. This is the second, I believe, of the Scott Snyder Comixology original line of books. Last week he had the horror book with Capullo. Wasn't so much into that. But this is a, I'll say this, Josh, very unexpected. Because Scott Snyder has been in a certain lane for a long time. And this was not in that lane. Which I think was exciting. And where it was an area that's very exciting to me. And this is a sort of neo-noir, cyberpunk PI story.
Yeah.
I'm reading Waiting for the Monsters, waiting for the
right,
you know, the twist, and really there's so far none in terms of what Snyder's mostly been doing lately, and this is just a story in the future. A girl commits suicide in the beginning, and it turns out it's the ex-wife of this PI, who we meet while he's on a case. But really it's about finding out about this world. Really fun, beautiful. Francis Manapul is obviously terrific. I haven't seen a lot of him lately. He does the whole shebang. He does the art, the inks, the colors. And at the end of it, I was surprised. I enjoyed it. It was incredibly fun. I wanted to read the next issue. And I think I was just really happy that it wasn't. And I've been enjoying that book, Noctera, that Snyder's doing, which is sort of a futury, but more dystopian, Walking Dead, monstery. This is just sort of straight up sci-fi, which I don't even know when the last time Snyder did that. I really like this. Did you read it?
I did. And I was, when I saw that you made it the pick of the week before I had read it, mm-hmm. and I was like, well, that's surprising. And so I started to read it, and really, other than a bit of a wall of text before...
The very beginning has a wall of text, but it gets past that pretty quick.
Yeah, before the title page, or the credit page, basically, I was like, oh, there he is. Mm-hmm. But after that, I couldn't have told you this was a Scott Snyder book, and I mean that as a compliment. It's exactly what you said. It's a cyberpunk Raymond Chandler. Mystery book, you know, like Dame walks into the office, the whole deal. I didn't love it in terms of, like, it's not my favorite kind of thing, but, you know, like, it was impressive. It was new in terms of, like, what you expect from these people. Even, I don't think I've seen a lot of Manipul over the last couple of years, but, you know, even that was seemed like a, you know, the coloring and mm-hmm. everything was really impressive. And his action scenes were really interesting. You had these inserts and you had like the images were flipped around, and yeah, I enjoyed it. It was a little, you know, it's not my favorite genre, but it is more my favorite genre than monster horror.
Yeah.
For sure. And so it's just really intriguing in that way.
This world is in the future. You can skin the world, basically. You can buy a skin and see the world through that skin.
A veil.
Yeah, it's called a veil, but it's basically a skin. Meaning you really like, let's say, the 1940s. You can skin the world to look like the 1940s. Or you really like Candyland. You could skin the world to look like Candyland. And I found that interesting. And then I found it interesting that the next step, which was basically that since the vast majority of the population is using these veils, you know, new buildings, but they're plain, so they can be skinned. In the real world, there's no life to it left. And I found that interesting. There was one bit that didn't really make sense, because if you're just skinning the world, it wouldn't change people's behaviors. Like, you could skin it like a porn world where everybody wants to sleep with you. It's like, well, that wouldn't change how people act. But other than that, the inserts were cool because in the action sequences, because we saw the scene through different veils. You know, that like one point the guy's shooting a gun and it's like he looks like a merman in one insert, and there's also like a cartoony sort of Looney Tunes world on another insert, or one where the main character's pulling a guy out of the car as he drives past on a motorcycle, and the insert makes him look like Indiana Jones. It's just an interesting way to sort of play the visual language of comics to give you the same scene through different lenses.
And get to everybody's subconscious immediately.
Yeah. You know, you could skin it the Old West, you could skin it to be the 80s. You know, it was an interesting world to live in for this character who doesn't use the veil, and also his client doesn't use the veil.
But most people do. I think there's really good sci-fi thinking in here.
Yes.
You know, like when Private Eye,
yes, like it was very,
thing came out. And so this is like, well, all right, well, where are we now and where could we possibly be? And right away, it makes a ton of sense that given the ability, people would just choose to live in whatever their particular long tail theory, you know, ideal imagery is.
Right.
And that is totally what people would do. It's like the next step from covering yourselves in tattoos or turning yourself into a, you know, a kind of personality on YouTube or TikTok. You know, like it totally makes sense. Or having an internet personality. It's all those things.
Right.
And then the idea that the rest of the world would become bland. I buy that because, you know, what's Wall-E? You know, in Wall-E, like everybody just sits in their chairs and gets super fat because that was an Idiocracy as well. I love that kind of thinking, and I think it's done really well here.
Yeah, I mean, it takes a lot of things that have been explored. You know, it's the inverse of Private Eye, where Private Eye was all about changing yourself through your masks and your, you know, your costumes. This is about changing the world around you. It's sort of like Ready Player One, but instead of going into a cyber world, this is the world around. This is literally the world around you is being skinned. You're wearing, you know, whatever. It's whatever. I don't remember how they process the skins. Is it through your eyes? I don't know if you're wearing a mask. It doesn't matter. It's about changing the world around you as opposed to yourself. And so it is interesting. I think you're right. I think a lot of the sci-fi thinking was what made it compelling for me as well.
Yeah, honestly, I think it's a better concept than Private Eye in terms of really what would happen because we're self-obsessed.
Although the first month of the lockdown when people were walking around in makeshift masks, I had a very distinct moment in this grocery store where I was looking at someone with some crazy like get-up that she had made. And I was like, oh, we're in Private Eye right now. Like, this is...
Fair.
We're all in these makeshift masks, and no one can see who anybody is. But you're right. I think of all the ideas, the idea of skinning, you know, we've all retreated into our subcultures, yes. right? Everyone's in their bubbles. So, you know, people really into Japanese anime would skin the world around to look like that. Or people really into Star Wars would skin the world to look like, you know, Star Wars planets. So it's 100% what would happen if the technology was available.
You know, there are going to be a subsect of people who want to be noticed, but most people just want to be into their thing. And that will mm-hmm. be where they find their identity. And I think you're seeing it. You know, like people are pulling further and further and further inward. We hate picking up the phone. You know, like now, like that, like that's really an interesting thing that has happened. And I think this is the right way to go for that. And it's one of those things where the more we look at it and the more we talk about those things as we get into the book, the more interesting it is, you know, like it's a real thoughtfulness to it. And I can appreciate that.
So it's got a lot of things going on here. And I think it's very good. If you haven't read this, it's a Comixology original. It's available for free on Amazon if you're a Prime member. So if you're as a lot of people are, if you're a member of Amazon Prime, you can go to Amazon, search Clear Number One, Scott Snyder, and you'll get it, and you can just send it to your Kindle. I read it on my iPad, my Kindle app. Just it looked like any other comic on my iPad.
That was the case with his last book with Greg Capullo.
Yeah, I'm sure they're all like that, yeah.
Demon. Is that every issue or just the first one?
I have no idea.
That was I figured it was just the first, but we'll
see, find out,
I guess.
But that's how you can check it out if it's free on Amazon.
I mean, it makes sense that if they're going to pay for TV shows and make them free on Prime, that they should do this too.
Yeah, you know, like for streaming services, it's all about getting you to sign up for streaming services. For Amazon, which is technically also has a streaming service, they just want you to sign up for Prime.
Right.
So that's why all the stuff on Prime is free, because they just, other than the deals they've got where things cost differently, but they just want you to sign up for Prime. And the same way that Disney Plus wants you to sign up for Disney Plus. So it may be that they're all free. I don't know. Maybe they'll make all comics free.
<He'll be fine laughs>
I don't think they will. Jeff Bezos has a lot of rockets to build.
I will say, here's my criticisms.
Mm-hmm.
I think would be that one, when he takes his helmet off later, I just didn't like the design of the character.
Interesting. Just a regular brunette dude.
I just think I wanted him to look a little rougher or older or less cool. You know, a little more Bogart and a little less Errol Flynn.
He's definitely like... cool haircut, young guy. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he looks like, you know, like he looks like a slightly rougher Dick Grayson. I think that's kind of what I'd give him. And I guess the one other bit is that, and I know that this is the genre, so you can kind of get away with it, but like the femme fatale shows up in the office and there's their flirtation. And well, you're the only one who doesn't like, it was just a little neat, I think, for me. And so that makes me think that it's going to be predictable. And that could be a trap. That could be, you know, the red herring of the thing.
Mm-hmm.
Or that could be saying, no, this is what the genre is, so we follow the rules of that genre, which is also a valid choice when you're doing, like, specific kind of genre stuff where you're doing that noir PI job, which might be the case. It's interesting. Also, the Kindle reader for comics is not terrible.
Not terrible.
I just want to point that out. It's not terrible.
So another book that was in the discussion for Pick of the Week was Batman, the Audio Adventures Special Number 1. This was an 80-page special that was tying into the Batman, the Audio Adventures podcast on HBO Max right now. So we have two streaming service books in a row. I saw this on the list and I thought, okay, because I hadn't listened to the podcast. I said, let me just take a look to see what it is. And it's, you know, it had 9 stories and I'm not going to go through them all. The show itself is written and directed by Dennis McNicholas, who is a writer-producer on Saturday Night Live. And most of the voice cast on the podcast is from Saturday Night Live. And here you have several stories co-written by people who you recognize, like Bobby Moynihan and Heidi Gardner and Ike Barinholtz and Paul Scheer.
You might recognize those names.
No.
I recognize Paul Scheer's name. I never recognize Bobby Moynihan.
Well, Heidi Gardner is on SNL currently. Ike Barinholtz did the Mindy Project with Mindy Kaling. Oh. This was delightful, and it had a really fun sort of indie vibe to it. Like, if you look at the artists on here, most of them you won't recognize, but Herman Peralta did a story, and Emma Kubert did a story.
Yeah.
That was sort of the tone of the art, and it was just sort of very timeless Batman. I've read that the vibe of the podcast, and I listened to the first one after reading this, so it did its job. The job of this book is to get me to listen to the podcast, and that's what happened.
That's crazy, by the way.
What?
That's the way that it goes. Yeah. It's not the other.
The vibe of the show is very much the animated series plus the 60s series melded together into one. So it's not a comedy, but it's sort of irreverent at times. Not a straight-up comedy at all. I thought for sure it was going to be based on the people involved, but it's not. And that's sort of the vibe of the book, is a very timeless throwback stories of Batman. And the conceit of the whole thing is that at some point into his career, Batman decides to officially become affiliated with the Gotham City Police Department. So he's becoming like an officially deputized member. That's kind of the situation with it on the 60s show anyway. In the story, it's all about the introduction of the Bat Signal. So it's how the Bat Signal is affecting all these people. So there's like a Catwoman story and a Penguin story and a Riddler story and a Two-Face story. And so it's like what happens when they first see the Bat Signal in the sky. It was just really fun. Great Robin story from Paul Scheer and Dennis McNicholas. Dennis McNicholas either wrote or co-wrote every story, and then you had other people. Like Bobby Moynihan co-wrote the Penguin story. He's the voice of the Penguin on the show.
Right.
Ike Barinholtz co-wrote the Two-Face story. He's the voice of Two-Face on the show.
So you've got an SNL writer-producer who's got 100,000 Batman stories in him and does pretty good at it. That's interesting.
It was fun. It was really like, the costume designs were very Bronze Age-y. You know, it's a Catwoman with the purple dress and a green cape, and it's the classic Robin costume, and felt very much like this fun throwback with sort of indie art on it. The art was terrific. Really, really terrific.
Yeah.
And Dennis McNicholas clearly loves Batman, loves the history of Batman, and can write comics because it wasn't overwritten. It was fun. Some of them were really funny. They moved pretty well. There was action.
Are they all connected?
Well, they're connected in the way that it's all about sort of the same night in Gotham where they all see the signal. Right. But it's not like the stories. It's a bunch of short stories. There might be one that are... And there's a connective tissue of Jack Ryder hosting a Gotham City special report that happens in between the stories.
Deep cut.
They aren't really connected. And I only listened to the first episode of the show, and it's just the idea that the characters are in the same is the only connection. Yeah, it was just a lot of fun. A lot of fun. I loved the Robin story from Paul Scheer and Dennis McNicholas. I loved the King Scimitar story from Dennis McNicholas, drawn by Herman Peralta. That was terrific.
I was flipping through it, and I saw the panel. I didn't know who that was, but I saw the panel. I was like, that's a big sword.
The King Scimitar.
Yeah, no, as soon as you said it, I was like, that's what I was looking at. I mean, that's just perfect. That's iconography meeting design.
Yeah, he's voiced by Fred Armisen on that podcast.
You're telling me Fred Armisen's doing a side project?
Fred Armisen's doing a side project. Jason Sudeikis is a voice. Seth Meyers is a voice. Kenan Thompson. Like, it's all SNL people doing the voice. All, except for Rosario Dawson, who's doing Catwoman. And Jeffrey Wright is Batman. Huh. The podcast I enjoyed. I only listened to one, but I liked the comic a hell of a lot. It was a lot of fun.
What's the format of the podcast? Is it like...
Well, the first episode also was a bunch of short stories that were connected, but I don't know how it is going forward. It was a half an hour. I think it was introducing you to the world. I don't know for sure. I need to listen to another one to see if
how
it's
long
the
was
same
the,
format.
The episode?
About 30 minutes.
Okay.
It's an audio
so
play.
So how does that work? Do they sell ads on it or...
No, again, it's just to get you sign up for HBO Max.
Is it a podcast then?
Oh, good question. It's an audio play, really.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Strange Adventures number 12, the final issue of the Tom King, Mitch Gerads, and Doc Shaner miniseries with Clayton Cowles on letters. So, Josh, when we read Mr. Miracle, we went into the final issue with the same sort of, not confusion, but like, is this going to all make sense in the end? And for me, it did. I read issue 12 of Mr. Miracle, and it just sort of all locked into place.
Right.
And I got it. It made total sense. Everything that happened made sense. All the stuff that was confusing made sense. It did its job. I'm not sure I understand.
That was my main review. And before you even got to any of that, what I was going to say was, Connor, I don't understand and I need some help.
Well, I'm no help because I was halfway through. I was like, I don't think this is going to be the same. I don't understand what's going on here.
Which isn't to say I'm disappointed with your answer because it's also validating. I was like, all right. Because a lot of times I'll be like, I don't know what happened. You'd be like, right there on that page, that thing happened.
Yeah.
I go, oh, I didn't see that. I felt as if at the beginning that I had missed an issue.
Mm-hmm.
I said, wait a minute, I didn't miss an issue. I'm aware of it.
Right.
I think it's probably there.
I think this is going to require a reread.
Yeah.
Like all the way through.
I'm almost positive because it's been a long time. And so I find it difficult to tell you if I thought it ended well because I'm not really sure how it ended.
Yeah, Mr. Miracle had that moment where I think it was Oberon revealed, like, you're basically a comic character. This is all true. Mm-hmm. You know, and that was where everything clicked into place, all the conflicting elements of the story. Here, I'm not quite sure what the ultimate point of the story was. Do you know what I mean? Like, I'm not sure what I'm supposed to feel about any of these characters at the end of this.
I think it comes down to Alana, is I don't know what I'm supposed to be thinking about her.
Right.
I don't understand her or her motivation. The time jumping back and forth, which is helped greatly by the two artists who really do not look the same, but it's seamless enough that I kind of have to think about it when I'm reading it. I mean, I'm like, wait, where are we now? Okay, right, the visual. But I don't notice when the art changes, basically, is what I'm saying. But yeah, I don't I think it's Alana. I think I don't understand Alana, and therefore it's not making complete sense to me.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the last issue, she kills Adam Strange.
And in this one, he's dead.
You know, this is out of continuity. It's Black Label.
Sure.
She looks like she hooks up with Mr. Terrific, and he's going to raise the daughter. That's what it seems like.
Did they hook up, or was it just they're having...
No, I mean, like, hooks up with him, right. like, not physically, but, you know, like...
Right, okay.
He takes her back to get the daughter from the Picts, and they get the daughter, and... It looks like she's going back to Ron to become the sort of the new Adam Strange, and he's going to raise the daughter, which is strange because the whole thing was, I want my daughter back, and now she's leaving the daughter with someone else on Earth. So at the end of the day, she's in the same position.
Yeah.
I need to read it again.
Yeah, I think I need to read it again. And like, I'm guessing you need to read the whole thing.
Yeah. No, yeah, for sure.
You know what I mean? It's not like you can just go to 11 and get it.
No,
I think
no,
it's
no.
all there. I think you wrote a novel. And I think that where the others, it was successful in issue form, this one may have needed to be done all at once. Because I'm not sure. I can't even give you like a really, like a solid review of this right now because I haven't gotten my head around it. And I'm not quite willing to say that that's a weakness. And I know that people are like, oh, you just like, you know. But I don't see it likely that if we do a thing that would just fall on its face that nobody would have noticed.
I always appreciate the audaciousness of what they do. What he does with his artist teams. And that means just, again, like Grant Morrison. It's not always going to work. And it hasn't always worked in the past.
Yes. What I'm saying is that I'm not sure that it didn't work yet. I'm not quite willing to make that call.
I don't know either. I'm just saying, maybe it didn't, and that's okay, because I've been enjoying the ride, but I have to reread it all the way through to make the final call, I think.
Yeah. This is probably not what people were looking for.
I'm sorry.
But, you know, at the same time, what I will say, I understand how you feel. I didn't get what I was looking for either.
I have failed you. All of you. What did you think of Dead Box number 2 from Mark Russell from, who's the publisher of this? This is Vault? Vault.
I barely remembered reading one.
Benjamin Tiesma.
I remember that it was confusing, and I wasn't sure what it was. Vault number 2, or not Vault number 2, Dead Box number 2. Yeah. It seems to be an anthology series about a... I'm not entirely sure how the Dead Box, which is like a red box machine that does something...
That conceit involved. Doesn't do anything for the story, I don't think.
It didn't in this issue. However, in fact, because I'd kind of forgotten about it, they mentioned it. It's on page 8 or whatever. Like, somebody goes to the Dead Box to get a movie, and then I guess the story goes from there.
So, in the first issue, we were in this town with these characters, and at some point, one of the characters rented like that weird sci-fi movie. We went into the movie for a little while, and we were like, okay. In this movie, we're still with the characters. It's still the girl.
Are these the same characters?
Same characters. It's the girl at the store, and the couple who's the guy might may or may not be gay. They're all the same characters. And then at some point, the couple, she breaks up with the guy because everyone thinks he's gay because he bought pink pants. And so she rents a romantic comedy, which on the cover features two people filleting a banana. And they go into that movie for a while. I don't think the movie bit adds anything to the story. It doesn't do anything for the story.
Okay, so putting that aside, I agree with you on that. I think it's sort of like a creature of the week, thriller, horror, whatever. That's the connective tissue. That doesn't really matter. The two stories in here and the way they were written, I found incredibly enjoyable.
No, I love the town stuff. I love the town stuff. I think it's been terrific. And I get the whole, you know, in the movie itself, it's about training these monkeys and it's about, it's about societal brainwashing, but how you're trained by society to deal with certain things. I get that. That's the allegory. I just don't think it adds anything to the story. I think that if you take that monkey stuff, it's still a great story, but the small town, and it's still interesting, and all the Mark Russell social commentary is still there, and it's just as powerful without the monkey stuff. That's all I'm saying.
A couple of things that I noticed reading this. A, I really did enjoy this, just sort of the two main stories with the people and how it, you know, worked, and the thoughtfulness of the things. And I think that what keeps getting me about Mark Russell is that he has a style, but he's not saying the same thing over and over. He's really like somewhat broad about the ills of society and interpersonal relationships and how we do things. And a lot of this is about, basically the story is about conformity. And it is, you know, how we are bred and raised to conform to something, you know, and what that means and how it gives us happiness or unhappiness. And it's just, in the space of an issue, it's pretty broad ranging. And he touches on all of these different things. Like, he's just got a real eye. You know, this felt most like a Flintstones issue.
Yes,
you know,
it did.
If we go way back. And the other thing that kind of amazed me is that he works with a bunch of different artists. He's not just with one person, but he seems to keep being able to work with people who do his scripts really well with the sort of the facial discomfort and like the exaggerated excitement and anger and like people with confused looks on their faces. Like there's a spiritual connection in this art to that of Steve Pugh or to whichever. And I find that really interesting.
Yeah. No, the art was really good from Benjamin Tiesma.
Yeah. But either way, like he manages to get artists who do those things really well for his scripts. And it seems to happen over and over again. And I think that's kind of amazing.
Yeah.
That he keeps finding people or people find them for him or whoever it is, you know, who can do that sort of small, personal, almost silly drama. Like from the, you know, that stuff was in Red Sonja and Lone Ranger. And the stuff was in Wonder Twins and that sort of silliness. And I think at some point I would get sick of the things that he has to say. But these just endless short stories about, they're really morality tales in a way.
Yes.
You know, over and over in one way, and just sort of like looking at society from a slightly skewed perspective. It's still interesting. It's still, you know, it's funny, but that's not even the main draw. It's just that, look at it this way. You know, I just find it so impressive.
Yeah. God, the part in the middle with the medicine was tough. It's like, ugh.
Yeah.
It's tough.
Yes, it was. Yeah, so he's got that in there too. And it all tends to work together.
Mm-hmm.
But it's very funny that he got... So basically, there's a guy... I'll just tell you, then we're going to move along.
Yeah.
They're at a flea market, and he sees some pants, and he goes, oh, man, I had these pants when I was in high school. They're great. How much are they? $3. Great, I'm going to go put them on. And then he comes back, and they're purple. And the lady who sold him is like, you know, those are women's pants. And he's like, so they fit, so what's the... And then everybody's staring at him, and his life falls apart, and his wife can't handle it. Because he put some ladies' pants on and he was okay with it.
Yeah.
I imagine if you are a person in their 20s, you know, you're like, these people are backwards idiots. But if you're people who are maybe a little bit older and have sort of lived in both worlds, like I feel like Connor and I have lived in, like we came from this earlier world where, like, people didn't stray from doing those things. And when we were kids...
No, that would not have been okay when we were kids.
Right. You know, like we saw through our lifetime a real change in the acceptance of gay people or people who are not gender norm conforming or whatever. And listen, it's still a big problem. But 15, 20 years ago, it was like you wouldn't even like it, it would destroy you.
30, 40.
So it's really
years.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So that was good. Hey, let's talk about our thing for a bit.
Mm.
Not for a long time.
This thing of ours.
This thing of ours. So we should redo our patron things to be like the mob ones we used at Goodfellas because I thought it was funny.
We can do that.
Soldier, capo, associate, friend. Go to patreon.com/ifanboy and help support the show if you like the show. Over the past few years, you have unlocked things. You're unlockers. That's what you do. What you do is you say, here's a key, and I'm going to let that go. It's a bad metaphor. There's the patron pick. We do that every week on the show. You've changed the show. There's Talksplodes, Booksplodes, Mediasplodes, YouTube content being uploaded. All the old shows are going up there. And I think that's been valuable. Then there's the monthly patron hangouts. We have the new stretch goal. If we hit our next stretch goal, it is that we're going to add a comic book TV show, special edition to our rosters of shows, where we will cover not every comic book show, but the ones like a season, therefore.
The ones we're already watching. We'll talk about that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, so we have something to say about it. Not a forced March show.
No.
Like, we're probably not going to get through many, many shows because
most,
I was talking to
most
a friend.
Even.
I was talking to a friend of mine the other day, and we were talking about comic book shows, and it just occurred to me, I was like, there's so fucking many of these now.
I forgot that Why the Last Man existed. I watched the first episode, and I forgot it existed.
Wow.
Just because there's so many. There's just, I know, but there's just so many things, and I was like, oh, right, that show I haven't thought about in 3 weeks. Now I'm 7 episodes behind. Well, I'm not going to watch that.
You should.
I know. I don't
You should.
Time.
Whatever you're watching that isn't that, though, you should watch that.
Yeah.
But you're right. That's the point. Just over, if you have the HBO Max, for example, you're done right there.
Mm-hmm.
If you choose to watch those things, they are pushing Titans on me hard, by the way.
You would not.
And
like
I don't want.
You would
nope,
not like.
I do not want it. Although my kids have been watching Teen Titans Go lately, and it's fantastic. So there's that. If we reach the next one after that, bit of a pipe dream, but as the barbecue video show will be coming back on a quarterly basis. There's also the patron Facebook group and patron Discord server for a little bit of that community flavor you may have been missing. We show up in Discord sometimes. I forget about it for weeks at a time, like Connor with Why the Last Man. Go to ifanboy.threadless.com. You can find 11 designs you can put on t-shirts, sweatshirts. Can you put them on ladies' underwear? Is that a thing? Man's underwear? I don't know. I think we check a box that says, yeah, put it on this thing. Some of them go on skateboards. Some of them go on phone cases. I got a new phone, and I need a new case. So I got to see if that's available yet. The Clint is Dead and the I Love Comics are available now. Clint was dead. I think it was last week.
Yeah, it was in Dark Ages.
Yep. And I was like, really? Page fucking one? He took down Clint and Taskmaster?
The sword in his back.
Yep. Right, page one. Didn't even mention it. You guys don't need to exist now. That's when I realized that Tom Taylor knew exactly that Taskmaster and Clint Barton are equal and opposite opposing forces in good and evil in comics.
Hmm.
And I think that's why I like them both. There's something there. There's two sides of a coin. We should work on that. That should be the pitch. You know who could write that? Matt Rosenberg.
True.
I want to write it. Designs can be applied to all sorts of things. Like we said, go to ifilmer.com/support. You will find a direct donation via PayPal link if you want to help out, but you don't want to deal with that stuff. Finally, ifilmer.com/Amazon. If you're a Prime member, you could read that book that we just talked about, for example, the pick.
Clear.
Also, you could use those links to buy the books that we talk about on the Booksplodes. You can find the pick of the week linked every week. You can use that as a general link to go get some stuff, and that's an affiliate link for us, which helps. That's all.
There was about 5 minutes for Norse Mythology number five. Norse Mythology 2, number five, was considered to be the pick of the week. I just love these fucking stories. I just love them.
Yes.
I mean, they're classic parables. I'm not reinventing the wheel by saying these are great stories. Everyone knows these are great stories. Also, the art was by Gabriel Hernandez-Walta this time.
Oh, it was, wasn't it?
It was awesome. This book was great. This was a nice little parable about the apples that the Asgardians eat that keep them immortal, and how that gets all fucked up by Loki and a giant eagle. And I just love these stories. I just love that they're doing these in a high-quality comic book way. I just enjoyed this book so much.
This, to me, it's, you know, I don't know if people know, but, like, these are what comics used to be, in a way. Like, this was a type of comic, is it would just be, like, a short story. You know, you could, this is volume 2, number 5. You could pick this up, having never read anything, and you'll get a little parable about the Norse gods, and it will be interesting, and it's a little, the word I'm using is basic, but I don't mean that in a bad way. Like, it's just, it's a simple little story. It's not good old superheroes. It's like good old comics and story. Like, comics used to be much more far-ranging, at least in terms of what most people were reading. But this is done with, like, such high-end modern skill that it's really cool.
And the wall art was beautiful.
The cold open of the first episode of The Wire is about them finding a body, and there's a character named Snot Boogie, and every week Snot Boogie tries to steal their money, and then McNulty asks the kid, he's like, well, if he steals your money every week, why do you let him play? And he's like, you got to, it's America. And Loki is Snot Boogie.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, why do they keep Loki around? You got to, it's Asgard.
Yep.
That's what I think.
You need the chaos element. Shang-Chi number 5, Gene Luen Yang, DK Ron. I'm probably saying that horribly wrong. This has been the continuation of the Shang-Chi versus the Marvel Universe story that we've been doing every issue. It's been a story with another character. This is Iron Man.
I thought this thing did everything right in what the Shang-Chi master of Kung Fu should have been doing.
Right.
And it was have some Kung Fu shit, and like the art was exactly what it needed to be. It had elements of manga and the motion lines and sort of the shapes. And, you know, he starts to get kind of the crazy Dragon Ball Z hair in this, and also there are some nods where, well, you wonder to yourself, well, what business does a master of Kung Fu have fighting with Iron Man and Thor or whoever, you know? And in this, they gave it some shrift. Like, you know, there's little bits where you have Iron Man just going, man, I forgot how fast he was. And he has, you know, adamantium-plated three-section staff. And, like, it just felt like a Kung Fu book that existed within the Marvel Universe, and there were just some beautiful and great sequences. I liked, you know, the very beginning, there's these guys, and they come in to sell Iron Man's armor, and also it's Iron Man's mid-late 80s silver and red armor, which is awesome. And, you know, the deal goes bad, and guns pop out of their every orifice. And I just thought it was super fun. I was like, oh, this is the comic book that I want to read for this. And I think after we got all the setup down and everything, it was like, just have some kung fu action. Let the artist go not on the page.
This has been a really terrific volume of Shang-Chi, where he's been with Captain America and Wolverine and all these different Marvel characters. And this one was particularly fun. You're right. The action was really well done and exciting. And you're right. Normally you think Iron Man and Shang-Chi face off. Shang-Chi's down in 5 minutes, but no, not so in this issue. It was good. And it made sense. It wasn't like a stretch. It was like, okay.
And it wasn't like reinventing the wheel. It was just like, oh, it's cool. Something happened to my glove. You sure about that? He's holding the glove. Like, we're awesome.
All of the characters who he's been dealing with, except for, I think, Wolverine, are together at the end to figure out the Shang-Chi problem. Also, it's a very funny visual gag where his little sister's got the Iron Man helmet on her head. It's a gigantic helmet.
I didn't get the end bit where, like, Iron Man's like, we were right. And I was like, no, you're not. He isn't a bad guy now. I don't know what you're talking about, but whatever.
They're going to figure that out. May's book number two. Number one was Pick of the Week. This continues. I really love this issue as well. As this father works his way through his grief and he thinks his dead daughter, who we found out about the first issue, may be alive. She was a big fan of May's books when she was sick. A voice has been calling him in the middle of the night saying, I'm still alive. Come find me. I'm in the center. And he figured out that she's in the center of a giant maze, and he starts seeing mazes everywhere. And I don't know if this is a literal supernatural thing, which I'm okay with, or if it's this guy's, you know, intense grief is making him see the world in a way that's not there. But I thought this was an incredibly affecting issue. He goes to visit his ex-wife, who has moved on with her life and has a new family, and that was a lot of tension there, and this continues to be terrific. I just love the simplicity of the art. Jeff Lemire is very, very good at human emotion through very few lines.
Kang the Conqueror number three. We're in a Kang era, which is what Kang would want, by the way.
Yes.
The obvious thing. I mean, we've done this, we talked this to death, but this issue is Kangtastic.
And a lot of Kang.
It's Kang versus Kang, and Kang is double-crossing Kang, and it takes a real ego to think that you're better than yourself. And they're really leaning into it, and it's ridiculous, and I think that there's probably a limit to how much we can take, but yeah, I'm okay right now.
This might have been at the edge of that limit. I really like this issue, but also at the same time, I found myself thinking, what is going on here? Like, with time travel and Kang, you can do anything. You can have young Kang show up and kill 60s Kang, like literally Kang from the 1960s comics fighting the Avengers in the 1960s, and sort of take over his position as Kang. And you just go like, okay, like there's nothing you can really, it never really will make sense, but
right,
that's Kang for you.
I consider that a Kang strength, actually, because most of the time when strength. I read a Kang story, I don't quite get it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think, doesn't matter. That's a feature, not a bug.
It's the Kangessence.
Yes, it is. The Kangessence is exactly what's happening. And listen, there is going to be a limit to this. And
right.
I don't want to lose it. But also, that's also fine. Just like shove me with as much Kang as you can and I'll enjoy it. And then when it's over, it's over. You know? We'll have had Kang.
Right.
You know, and they'll try. They'll be like, hey, here's some more Kang. And you're like, no, dude, you did it. Don't ruin it. But right now, eat up. You're at the all-you-can-eat rib barbecue.
And we even mentioned the best part of this was inserting Dr. Doom. In Dr. Doom's miniseries, we had Kang show up. So here, Dr. Doom shows up, and we have the terrific back and forth in which the two Kangs are Kang posturing at each other. And young Kang says, time means nothing to Kang. And so Doom pops up, Kang means nothing to Doom. If you're going to have two guys in a room, or three guys, technically speaking, these are the guys to have in a room.
I'll tell you what, if you ever need to improve Doom, add Kang. And vice versa.
So,
Kang is Doom, but silly.
Yes.
Eventually we're going to... Hey, at one point they said that Doom was a Kang descendant.
Possibly.
Or maybe it was vice versa.
Well, because, you know, Kang is a Richards descendant, so that would make Richards and Doom something.
Oh my God.
So we'll find out. Another book that I thought about for Pick of the Week was Six Sidekicks of Trigger Keaton number 5. This was just a big old crazy brawl, and it was incredibly well drawn by Chris Schweitzer. It's a giant brawl inside basically like a set for like a Egyptian film, like Temple of Doom or Cleopatra or something, with 100 angry stuntmen fighting our six heroes. And there's just so much crazy action going on. And then we get a really interesting character reveal in the middle of it. I thought this was another terrific issue.
It was. There should always be one of these books.
Yes.
Like there should always be, once a month, I should get a Kyle Starks book that's just got a bunch of weirdos in it. And he's
hearken to me. Yeah, in the middle of it, the pacifist sidekick nurse who hasn't wanted to get any of the fights was revealed to also be a kung fu master who has sort of had to decide to go back into fighting. And he starts fighting everybody just like the girl can. It was fun. And then at the end, because this is issue 5 and six of the final issue, one of the guys said, oh, I know who killed Keaton. Because this whole thing's about finding out who killed Trigger Keaton.
Right.
I thought this was terrific.
Trigger Keaton made the kid, the pacifist, the nurse,
mm-hmm.
do one-finger push-ups shirtless over a barbecue while he read a copy of, quote, High Class Skank.
With his feet up on his back.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's pretty good.
There was one panel in here where we see the first attack of the stuntmen. I'm trying to find it. It's on page well, six, Josh, for you, where we see, like, you know, all the stuntmen jumping off with the ropes.
Yeah.
And there's just so much great cartoon work in there. Very minimal lines, but there's so much action with the movement of the ropes. It's just incredibly good cartoon work here.
Schweitzer's an amazing cartoonist, and it's really easy. Like, if you, I mean, I don't know why you would, but if you were just following him on social media and you weren't familiar with his work, you know, he does a lot of sketches and, like, his, like, you know, he does characters in his style. That's a thing that he does all the time. But the first time we came across him, he was doing these pirate books for Oni. Right. And, you know, this is that guy. Like, so it's not just, you're right. And I kind of hadn't really considered it, but, like, it's really good comic book work. He draws a great car. Who draws a great car and can do all of this other stuff? And all the characters, you know who you're looking at, and there's a lot of them. Yeah, it's real good.
Yeah. I think the first issue, we weren't quite sure, but I'm really enjoying this book.
Me too. It's one of those ones that I see it comes out in a week, and I get excited. I'm like, oh, awesome. Because it's not like anything else. It's not like anything else, and that's important.
So those books we wanted to talk about, but if you're a patron at patreon.com/ifanboy, every patron can vote every week to add a book to the rundown. We call it the patron pick. We talked about it on 800th episode. This week, the patron pick, clear number one. So we have a chord again. Happened last month like three times.
Mm-hmm.
We'll do what we normally do in this segment, Josh, is do our ratings on clear number one ratings.
Ratings. Do you think that the patrons are getting better at predicting things that we will like or would, you know, look favorably upon? Is that a thing that's happening?
No. I mean, I think it's just a cluster right now, you know. If you go out to the entire year, you're looking at maybe four times out of 50, you know.
I do think that there is hunger for variance in content, and that's been a thing.
I also, as we discussed in 800, there's a myriad of reasons why to pick a patron pick.
Sure.
And I think people were excited about this Snyder book that didn't feel like a Snyder book. I don't know. There's a lot of things going on here. Anyway, ratings out of five stars. I'm going to give clear. I mean, I'm going to give it a five because it's my pick, Josh.
3.5.
Sticking with it.
Yes.
I am too.
Yes.
I don't know if that's how long it's going or what, but I'm definitely sticking with it. Patreon.com/ifanboy. That's where you can vote to add a book to the rundown. But at the $5 or higher level, you get your own superpower live on the show as we make our way through the list of people like these four patrons.
Aaron Allen.
Brother of Ethan Allen.
Brother of Ethan Allen, Revolutionary War hero from Vermont.
They were born very far apart.
Has the ability to always give the right answer when cornered.
Oh.
So any business meeting, anytime, you know, he's not prepared, they say, Aaron, but what are the numbers in quarter four? And he's like, 3.56 million.
Wow.
He doesn't know where he got it, but he's
got it. Just comes to him.
Yeah. Yeah. That's his version of the spider sense is that he always has the answer.
Right.
Even if not prepared and not expecting the question.
It's good. It's a good one.
Yeah, it has nothing to do with the fact that you just said, Josh, you're up. And I had not thought for one moment.
The stakes are lower here.
I cannot. Thousands of people don't listen to him in his business meeting.
That's true. I can't fire you, though.
The stakes are only lower because we just think of it as you and I.
That's true. But if there are other people here.
If somebody here says the wrong thing, it's all over.
That's true. It's over.
Yep.
It's over. Mark White. Every 10 years, Mark White sheds his skin like a snake and comes out looking 5 years younger. It's like the best facial. You know, he comes out, he's lost 5 years on his skin. He looks terrific. You see Mark, you're like, what happened?
Wait, so he gets it every 5 years?
Or no, every 10 years he sheds his skin and looks 5 years younger.
I like that. That's good math. That's what I was looking for. Okay. So it's not, he does not live in stasis.
No. He's still aging. Just
is this just the appearance? Or like, could he theoretically make it to 140 because of this process?
No, this is just his skin, his appearance.
Okay. Like, so his body is still aging at the same.
Yeah. It's like people in Beverly Hills.
Fair.
Your body's inside is aging.
But natural.
Yeah. He doesn't have to pay for that. The microderm skin abrasion thing.
Crisp diction cannot pick the winner, but can pick the loser. So he goes to the track. You know, like, you want to be the guy who can pick the winner. Like, that horse is going to win. He can't do that, but he can tell you, like, that guy's the loser. Now, he can't pick all the losers because that would, by default, tell you the winner.
What if it's a two-horse race?
He might have an advantage there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fair enough. Yeah. Yeah. In a two-person race, I guess he does have that.
What about, is it any sport event? So like a baseball game, he'd know the loser?
What if I put an asterisk on and say, in anything that requires more than two people or teams?
So any horse race.
But okay.
Or well, see, though, marathon.
It's about an individual, though. So like, say that you have a football game, and you can apply this to whatever version of the word football you want.
Right.
I want to be continental and say football, but mean soccer, but then I have to clarify it in America. And
football.
I resent the whole thing.
Yep.
Footy. Football.
Footy.
If I say football, you'll know that I mean
yes.
the beautiful game and yes. not the Pittsburgh Steelers. He could pick out a guy and be like, that person is going to lose. Now, that doesn't mean the team's going to lose. But
it's the person's
like, going to go badly. Yeah, in some way. I really was only thinking about this in horse racing terms when I started talking. So everything else after that was just...
You could just make about horse races.
I mean, feels possibly too narrow.
All right.
That stock's a loser.
Alex Cassara. You remember Spy Hunter, Josh?
Of course I do. That was a must. I better get a quarter. They have Spy Hunter here.
Yeah, Spy Hunter was
I got to play for... I can play for 1.5 minutes before I die.
You play longer than you played pole position, but not that much longer.
No. That's the thing that people don't understand about how video games used to be. They were very short and very expensive.
I could have bought a real car for the amount of quarters I spent on pole position for the accumulated total of maybe 1 hour of gameplay.
I was over the course of my childhood. Ivan Stewart's Off-Road, where there were three wheels and you would go around the course.
I just know that the movie theater by my house had Pole Position and Spy Hunter, and it had Gauntlet, and I think at one point Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles was added. But the point is, I spent so much money on Pole Position and Spy Hunter as a kid at the movie theater, I could have bought a house. Anyway, Alex Cassara is a human Spy Hunter car. He can shoot smoke bombs and oil slicks and surface-to-air missiles out of him. So if he's being chased, he can emit an oil slick.
So he's not
his pursuer.
Doesn't take the form of a car.
No, it just comes out of him. Where and how? I don't really want to get into.
In modern action films,
not enough oil slicks
very much anymore. No.
Well, we realize the environmental harm that would come from oil slicks.
When you say oil slick now, do you picture a man in basic cowboy uniform, but like the 80s version, so like a denim and a hat. You know, just like Alan Jackson, just slipping right. his arms up in the air. As soon as you say oil slick,
smoke screen, all of it. So don't chase Alex Cassara.
And if he gets in trouble, does a truck come along and he runs up into it?
Yes. Patreon.com/iFanboy. The $5 high level, you can get superpower live on the show like Aaron, Mark, Crisp, Diction, and Alex. Let's do an email. We got a little bit of time. Matt P. from Miami, Florida. For a very, very long time, comic books were clearly better than comic book movies. Their technology didn't support our suspension of disbelief. There were few enough that almost all of them were origin stories, and therefore studios were rarely willing to invest in the scope and scale needed to bring the page to life. Is there a case to be made now that comic book movies are better than comic books, especially if you exclude comic books outside the DC Marvel superhero genres? My emotional reaction to the climax of Endgame was certainly more intense than reading the climax of any modern superhero event. The writing for the best of them, like Ragnarok, is at least on par with the mainstream superhero books. The world building of Black Panther was better than most contemporary books, with the ironic exception of some of the most recent runs of Black Panther itself. Is it too sacrilegious to even debate? No, it's not not to debate.
I was thinking as you went through this, and I think that this is important. There are two different things, and one of them is easier than the other to ingest, and one of them is easier than the other to produce. So a movie is easier to ingest. It is a gigantic number of people and resources and investment pointed at you to deliver an emotional result and move product. And what these movies did was they took the things that work best about serial superhero comics, and for once, we're able it will be successful at combining that with what works great about movies, and they have been greatly successful because of it.
Yep, changed the whole industry.
And that will end, by the way. I think about that sometimes. It was the other day when I was like, there's so many superhero shows, and I'm like, this is going to be over someday, just like Westerns.
It's a modern Western, that's all it is. I was watching a show recently, and I was I was watching Stargirl, and Joel McHale plays Starman in flashbacks, wearing the full-on 40s Starman costume.
Ted?
He doesn't wear the red suit with the yellow. It's the red, white, and blue suit from the 40s.
So no Finn.
No. And I think to myself, does he feel ridiculous? And I thought, well, he's just wearing a Western costume. Like, that's all it is.
Yeah. It's really interesting. So it's a good question because, like, well, then what is it that makes you feel? What does it make you feel something about comics? And I think comics are more of a long-term, slow-burn situation. It's a habit. It's a part of your life. You go back in, you're reading these stories for years. So, like, is a premier network drama better than a soap opera? Yes. Are there people out there who are much more attached to... I mean, and these are old things. I don't know if there even are soap operas like that anymore.
Yeah, there are. There's a couple. They're not as many as they used to be.
Like Days of Our Lives, because they watch it every day, and they're invested in the thing and have been for a long time. It's a different... They're both using superheroes, and they're both using similar stories and characters, but it's a different delivery device and ultimately a different product, if that. That's how I tend to.
They all have pluses and minuses. You know, like, I agree with him that I tend to get much more emotional watching a movie, even a superhero movie, than reading a comic because those are real people. And
we were just talking about that.
Lizard brain connects to that more than a drawing of a person. Right. You know, we were talking about food on the 800th episode. You know, when there's a real actor who's very good at their job, you know, emoting on screen, more than likely will elicit an emotional reaction from you as opposed to a drawing of a face.
Right. And to be fair, it's easier for them to do it. And to be fair, at this point, like, now I tend to appreciate looking at a well-drawn, produced comic book page more than I am most shots in movies. Because not most of it. I mean, there's times that it works both ways. But, like, a movie is more likely to make you swell up with an emotion than a comic book. You know, but a still from a movie isn't going to go up my wall as quick as, like, a comic book page that I loved.
Now, you mentioned earlier that the movie's now replicating the comic book experience. So, you know, you've got Endgame was the culmination of a 12-year story on screen. So it's doing the same serialized storytelling so that by the end of it, you've got 12 years of emotion invested in this story. So it ends, and of course you're going to feel something, except for Endgame because it was a terrible movie. But
I just want to point out, I don't agree with that, and I'm not arguing with Connor, but I don't want to hear from anybody that you guys don't like whatever. I'm letting him say it. It's his opinion, and I totally respect it. That's all.
Infinity War was terrific. Endgame was bad. But, you know, so it makes sense. You know, I don't disagree necessarily. I've said for years that I thought animation was a better medium for superheroes than comics are, and I don't necessarily still disagree with myself, but all of these mediums have different strengths and weaknesses, and I mean, Matt's correct that they can do such great things now in the movies that you can replicate a lot of things from the comic book reading experience on screen, and you're gonna touch more people, way more people than I'll ever read a comic book will be moved by the plight of Tony Stark than will ever read an Iron Man comic.
Mm-hmm.
They're very good. It just depends what you're looking for and what you respond to. Like if you're going totally on the metric of emotional response, then yes, you could make a case that comic book movies are better than comic books, but they're all different. They're all different storytelling.
I think it's interesting because, and I don't know how normal people are with this, but like, I don't get lost in a comic book anymore most of the time because I read it like trying to look for what makes great comic books, which isn't the same thing as looking for great stories or a great experience or something. And I do that with movies sometimes, but it is easier for me to get lost in a movie. And I consider that a plus. Like, wow, I wasn't thinking about anything. Whereas a lot of time I will be like, that was a great bit of dialogue. Oh, look what they did there acting. You know, look at that shot. You know, I do that when I watch anything, but it's easier to get lost in the comic. And if you're not of that mindset where you're analyzing everything all the time because that's what you are trained in, movies are a much quicker hit, but less frequent.
Yeah, we've talked about this a lot over the years. I'm annoyed by a lot of the ways that movies are affecting comics. I'm not venerating the movies above everything, but there's a lot more freedom. You know, there's a lot more freedom in these movies to tell a story than there is in a comic because... Ironically, because, you know, the comic artist and writer are the freest of all because they can write and draw whatever they want.
The method.
But what I'm saying is the continuity doesn't bog the movies down, although it's going to start doing that. But, you know, you can tell a great standalone Black Panther film because you don't have to worry about 30 years of Black Panther history plus all the other appearances he's making. You can just tell your singular Black Panther story. So there's a lot more freedom in that to not be beholden to what's come before. But then there are other problems involved with that as well.
You have the ability to... There's other sensory signifiers in a movie. So like
music and
well, not even the music, but like T'Challa's voice.
Right.
like, that doesn't exist in comic books. Right. But if you're watching a movie and there's a sweeping shot over the plains of Wakanda and you hear the actor's voice talk, you cannot do that in a comic book. It is not possible. And that's, so just sound as an aspect of the experience does not exist in comic books. Mm-hmm. And so they've got something on you there. It's not even the motion. It's, you know, like, there's just that one other element, you know, like, you know, you only have visual and reading basically in the comic book. You've got a bunch of other things. We're sensory beings, and that's going to,
they're working with different tools.
We can go on this forever.
Yeah. Yep. Listen, it's obviously not too sacrilegious to debate. It's an interesting conversation. I don't think, if you're someone who thinks the movies are better than comics, I think it's totally fine. I mean, they're good.
Clearly a lot of people, a lot more people watch.
You're in the majority.
Yeah, you are.
I mean, they're very good. All these things, for the most part, are being done at very high levels of quality. There's a reason why they make billions of dollars, and I don't think there's anything wrong with enjoying them more.
They have an enormous incentive to do it really well, and a track record to let them invest in it, you know. The benefit, I think the one benefit that comic books have is the ability to experiment with their storytelling and how they're going to do things, and you get much more variety in comic books in their storytelling than you would in movies, just because of the investment.
Enjoy it while it lasts. It's all going to be pirates next time.
Arr.
Contact@ifanboy.com. That's, you can write in like Matt P. from Miami, Florida, or if you want to write in for a Media Explode show, please put Media Explode in the subject line so we know what show the email's meant for. Thank you for writing in. Here's some things that are happening. Speaking of Media Explode, right behind this show on the feed is our latest episode of Media Explode. That's where me and Josh and Ron, our original co-hosts, talk about some non-comics media that we've been enjoying. And this past one, we did a deep dive on The Many Saints of Newark and also Ted Lasso Season 2. And also, we did a long bit on Martin Scorsese and Goodfellas in the email segment. It was a fun show. Interesting discussion about those, the movie and the TV series and Scorsese and other things. It was a good episode, if I can say so myself. So check that out in the feed behind this one. And then coming up this week, if all goes to plan, as you never know, it will be our special edition coverage on What If. The Animated Brain Trust is going to reconvene to cover the first season of What If, just like we did for Invincible. This is sort of a preview of the kind of show you'd get for if we hit the next stretch goal, covering a season of the comic book show. So you can check that out coming this week. And then later this month, we have a patron hangout on October 30th, where me and Ron and Josh will talk about comic book nonsense, or even just all kinds of nonsense, for an hour. Chat room Q&A, that's where we talk about the news sometimes. We spend a lot of time talking about Substack when that news hit on the patron hangout. And occasionally, usually there's a pre-show happy hour with me and a bunch of other people who aren't normally on the hangout. So the next one will be October 30th. Check that out there. And then coming later this month, I think, will be the special edition for the Injustice cartoon, because that comes out next week. But just because we have so many shows, we're going to have to push that show back a few weeks. And then at some point, Josh will have a Talksplode.
It's in scheduling.
So in hopefully scheduling. That's a lot of stuff this month. And then next month is our Booksplode. We're going to do Avengers Forever, the classic Avengers Forever. I say that now because they're going to redo a new story called Avengers Forever. We're doing the classic Kurt Busiek, Carlos Pacheco, Kang story, Avengers Forever. So that's coming next month. If you want to read along with us, go check that out.
That's probably my first significant Kang.
Well, we'll discuss that on the show. We're going to be reading it on Marvel Unlimited, so it's available in a lot of places. And then Shang-Chi and Legend of the Ten Rings review show will be in November when it hits Disney Plus, and then Eternals also comes out in November, and I may have, Josh, figured out a way to comfortable seeing movies. I went to see No Time to Die at 11 a.m. empty theater, so I might do that for Eternals. Nice. So maybe we can get that review out quicker than we did for Shang-Chi. We'll talk about that later, off the air.
All right, let's do that. That's fine. Head over to ifanboy.com to find all of our shows and a vast history of comic book writing from our talented writers. You can go to facebook.com/ifanboy or @ifanboy on Twitter or @ifanboycomics on Instagram. Did you follow all that? You can find out what the pick of the week is before the show comes out. You can follow us individually, CS Kilpatrick on Instagram, J.A. Flanagan on Instagram. I could have done that more efficiently. And you can subscribe to our YouTube page at youtube.com/ifanboy to keep up to date on old video show re-uploads. They're at the rate of 3 a week right now. Will that continue when we finish the long shows? I could tell you.
We only have about, I did the math yesterday, I might have done it wrong. We only have about 20 more full-length shows to go. So if you're looking at the rate of 2 a week for those, you're looking at about 10 more weeks of uploads of the full-length shows. There's a lot more minis to go because we're only doing 1 a week of those. But we're almost done with the full-length ones.
There's a mini of Madman, Atomic Circles number 9.
Comics. Atomic Comics.
Atomic Comics. Sorry about that. Which is definitely Ron.
Yes.
There is a show on The Losers, which is the thing that's sort of been lost. It was a pretty good comic book series and a pretty good movie, but then Sands of Time.
Yeah, we reviewed the comic and the movie, or we reviewed the comic, the history of the Losers, and looked forward to the movie for that episode.
Right, because it wasn't just a comic book series. The Losers were a Silver Age.
Yeah, like that was the whole beginning of the New Frontier.
And then a show, C2E2 2010 Part 1. What I can tell you about that show is that my son had been born about 3 weeks before that, and I am death itself, but very happy with the
You weren't
the
there, though.
Oh, what? Yes, I was.
I don't think you were on the show.
All right.
Because you had a son who'd just been born.
I was totally there.
You might have just edited it.
Okay.
I don't know. You were involved somehow. I don't remember. Honestly, I don't know.
Doesn't matter.
I'm just making things up at this point. Oh, it's my turn. If you like the show, please write a review or leave a star rating on Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts. Any show you listen to, it's a huge help for the all-knowing, all-seeing algorithm that runs everything. So if you like the show, it helps them to review it or star rate it.
Oh, great algorithm!
That is how we appease the algorithm. Don't make it angry. And better yet, tell your friends. Word of mouth is the best way to help the show. We do appreciate that. And that is it for this week's show. As we enter the final bit of the year, the last quarter, the last season, it's getting chilly here in Los Angeles.
Mm.
Which means there's not a lot of shows left, but we'll be here for all of them until the holidays. And until then, my name is Connor.
I'm Josh. I need a nap.
Clearly.
Just telling you, in case you were like, what's up with Josh? Josh needs a nap. That's what's going on here. It has to be so bad. I wish it did.